From Commerce Committee. Today is Monday, March 1st, 2021. I'm Senator Mia Costello, and with us is Vice Chair Senator Holland. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair.
We also have Senator Stevens. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Senator Gray Jackson, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon.
I also want to thank, I'm Senator Mia Costello, by the way. I also want to thank the recording secretary, Carrie, and the LIO operator, Alex, for making this possible. Today we have one item on our agenda, and it is Senate Bill 45. It was introduced by Senator Stevens. This is the second hearing. Today we will be taking public testimony, and we have two invited individuals to begin, and then we will open up the public testimony. I also want to mention that Senator Rivak is, while he's not here in person, he is listening on the line. So welcome, Senator Rivak. Thank you for making time for the committee today. I wanted to mention that we have, for questions online, Joe Darnell with the Department of Behavioral Health Tobacco Enforcement, Sharon Walsh, who's the Deputy Director of Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licenses. Also for questions, we have the State of Alaska Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. And then we have two individuals for invited testimony, and then we will open up for public testimony. So our first individual is Michelle Ketchum. And I'm not seeing that Michelle has called into the line yet, but we'll take a brief at ease so we can get her online. Back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We'll go ahead and start with Dr. Rathkopf, who's a pediatric doctor specializing in asthma. She is joining us through Microsoft Teams. Welcome, doctor, and please introduce yourself to the committee and go ahead and provide your testimony on Senate Bill 45.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Costello and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Melinda Rathkopf, and I'm medical director at the Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Center of Alaska. I'm board certified in allergy, immunology, and pediatrics, and I'm here today representing the Alaska chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Alaska State Medical Association. And I appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony in support of Senate Bill 45. I've been a practicing physician for over 20 years and a very strong advocate for tobacco prevention. I grew up in the Deep South, where tobacco was a way of life. From hearing my parents tell tales of having to pick tobacco when they were younger, to both parents smoking. And unfortunately, I buried a parent due to lung cancer. My father's wedding gift to me was actually to quit smoking. Unfortunately, it still contributed to his death. I raised my two girls understanding the dangers of tobacco. So imagine my disbelief when I walked into my high school daughter's room a few years ago and found her and her friends vaping. Here was my child, who would never think of smoking a cigarette, at least not in my house, holding an e-cigarette. And unfortunately, e-cigarettes are incredibly appealing to our youth. And since 2014, are the most popular nicotine product used by teens. We have made steady progress in reducing smoking rates in Alaska, but e-cigarettes is now threatening that progress. It was originally introduced as a safe alternative to smoking and a tool to even quit smoking. Unfortunately, this has not turned out to be true. Evidence does not support this claim, and e-cigarettes themselves can lead to lung cancer, emphysema, and heart attacks, and what it's doing to our youth is alarming. Current e-cigarette use by high school students more than doubled between 2017 to 2019, and even more alarming is middle school students, where it more than tripled from 3.3% in 2017 to 10.5% of middle school students in 2019. In 2017, about 15% of Alaska high school students reported having used e-cigarettes, and in just two short years, that climbed to 26%. We know that kids who use e-cigarettes are more likely to go on to use traditional cigarettes in the future, and 95% of adult smokers today started smoking before the age of 21. The teenage and young adult brain is still developing, and when exposed to nicotine, whether in an e-cigarette or traditional cigarette, the pathways that lead to addiction are altered. Addiction to nicotine is quicker in teenagers, and it's much harder for teenagers to quit. And nicotine replacement therapy and quitting options are often not covered by insurance for teenagers. This leads also to an increase in mood disorders, attention difficulties, and increase the risk of addiction to other substances. Even in adults, e-cigarette use is highest among 18 to 24-year-olds in the young adult brain. Fortunately, we have a way to reduce tobacco use. Raising the purchase age to 21 is a very important part of this plan. In 2015, the Institute of Medicine concluded that raising the minimal legal sales age for tobacco products would reduce tobacco initiation, particularly among adolescents 15 to 17 years of age, and improve health across the lifespan and save lives. It would lead to a 12% decrease in smoking prevalence, would result in 223,000 fewer premature deaths, 50,000 fewer deaths from lung cancer, and 4.2 million fewer years of life lost for those born between 2000 and 2019. We would also see a near immediate reduction in preterm birth, low birth weight, and SIDS. Three quarters of adults support raising the minimum legal age for tobacco products to 21, including 7 out of 10 adults who smoke themselves. So in short, we have a duty to protect the future health of our teens and young adults. Passing Senate Bill 45 is an important step to limiting adolescent access to these products in our state. We have an opportunity to make a lasting impact here. Thank you for your time today and allowing for me to speak.
Thank you, Dr. Rathkoff. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Holland.
Thank you for your testimony. I, too, am from the South, and I, too, lost my parents, one cancer of the larynx from smoking and the other from emphysema from smoking. But do you have a stand on the tax portion of the bill? Because that's my concern, is that e-cigarettes may not be a authorized cessation device or an accepted cessation device, but I'm hearing a lot of response from my constituents about it is a cessation device they've used to get off of tobacco products. And they believe that a tax would just make it that much harder for them to use them.
You know, I don't think not taxing it to that level is the answer, unfortunately, because if you really look at studies, it's not been shown to help. And the population level, the majority of people quit smoking. So even though there may be anecdotal evidence from some of your constituents, overall, it's not been shown to be an effective cessation device. And I think the rates that it's addicting our youngsters, our teenagers, far outweighs the detriment that it might be. You know, the answer might be looking at other nicotine replacement options and other cessation techniques and getting better coverage there. But I don't feel, I think the benefit of raising the taxes and raising the price far outweigh the risk of those that may be using it for cessation, because really the data doesn't warrant it being used as a successful cessation device.
Thank you.
Okay, next we will have Michelle Ketchum, who is trying to call in to the online public testimony section. And so we will take a brief at ease while we try to grab Michelle. Back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I appreciate everybody's patience. And next we have Michelle Ketchum online. She has been invited to provide a testimony to the committee. Michelle, can you hear me?
I can, and I'm thankful to be connected. It took about 10 minutes and some technical errors, but I think they got their system worked out, so I'm happy to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in and want to give you time to share your public testimony. So go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony for us.
Okay. Do you have a time frame that you don't want me to go over?
Michelle, I think it's important to hear your story so you're able to take as much time as you would like.
All right. And you stop me if you want different direction or more or less information. I'm totally open. My name is Michelle Ketchum. I have two children here in Anchorage who have had the privilege of attending Grace Christian School. I have one who is a senior and one who is a junior. On February 3rd, I got a call from the school saying I need to get to the school immediately. And what I was told on the phone, or what I heard, was that, you know, Ryan said something to Rachel and she's now hallucinating. Well, obviously that didn't make sense. So as I'm throwing clothes on and unburying the car, I got in the car, was driving to the school, and I called back, and they said, I said, what do you mean Ryan said something to her? She goes, no, she's hallucinating, and she has now passed out, and we need, you know, we want to call 911. I said, absolutely, call 911. So I got to the school, was directed upstairs, and paramedics were there. Before my arrival, my daughter stopped breathing, and luckily the nurse was there and did chest compressions on her. She probably stopped breathing for just a minute, but she started breathing again. Paramedics arrived. They took vital signs, determined that, you know, she was okay. You know, they checked blood sugars and every other vitals and said that she was fine. They said, you know, we can take her to the hospital, but we see this all the time. And they convinced me again as I was putting her in the car that, you know, she in fact is okay, that there's no harm in sending her home. They say, you know, they said in her mind, their mind, that she was fine. Well, for me as a parent, seeing my daughter sprawled out on the floor and driving there praying the whole time that she survives, it's pretty overwhelming. What happened is, you know, for a backstory on my children, they were both adopted from Russia in 2010. We discovered just recently this year that our daughter was repeatedly raped multiple times while she was in the hospital. And while she was doing well for many, many years, she was dealing with some post-traumatic stress disorder. And in October of last year, she was admitted to Providence because she was suicidal. Before that time, you know, and it was even verified with drug screens, she did not take drugs, she did not vape, was not drinking alcohol, she was totally clean. Once getting out of the hospital in November, she asked her brother for what is known as a dab pen. Dab pen is a way of taking synthetic marijuana. So what happened, he didn't have one. He was actually the night before this incident, he was out distributing hot chocolate to the homeless. There's a restaurant downtown that at the close of business, they take hot chocolate and spread it out to the homeless people down there. They found one of these things. He brought it home, charged it up that night, and gave it to her in the morning before school. He actually smoked some of it himself, not very much. She took an incredibly large hit, and that's what caused her to stop breathing. That was the second time in her life that she's ever been exposed to marijuana. The first time was, I think, a couple months before, after she got out of the hospital. What led to this was nicotine. When she got out of the hospital, she hooked up with some friends that used vaping, and she started using vaping. She became addicted very, very quickly. And if you don't know what vaping equipment is, I didn't know. I've heard of Juuls. I knew what they looked like. I knew what to be looking for. You know, my kids have their doors open in their bedrooms all of the time. I check vehicles. I look for things. I don't assume that, you know, my kids can't somehow get into trouble and it can't happen quickly. She was addicted to nicotine very, very quickly with what are called puff bars. Puff bars are disposable vaping devices that a regular puff bar can hold 400 puffs in it, which is the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes. She was using what they call Puff Bar Plus, which are the equivalent of 800 puffs and the equivalent of two packs of cigarettes. She was able to get these readily from people around the neighborhood. The biggest way that she got them was via use of Snapchat. So basically, people advertise out there, hey, this is what I got. Kids respond, they meet up, and they get it. She was addicted so bad. She went on a trip to Fairbanks with her basketball team, and on that trip, she felt like she could not go to Fairbanks without vaping equipment. So she found a friend, who's obviously not a friend, to deliver it to her at school before her trip, and she took that with her. On her trip, she felt incredibly convicted, wanted desperately to stop, did not want vaping to be a part of her life, was trying very, very hard to stop, had confessed to four of the girls on the team, was working with them. On the ride home from that, they were in a really actually bad car accident. Their car flipped upside down on the way home from Fairbanks. actually it was a van. Luckily, nobody was injured, but Rachel was really, really, really traumatized. And that's when she asked her brother for marijuana. And part of it was she wanted to get off of the vaping, and somebody told her that it would be better if she used marijuana because it didn't have as many bad side effects. So she went from addicted to vaping in a very, very short amount of time to, okay, I should try marijuana instead. And she also was considering, somebody said that if she used LSD, that would be a way to get off of the vaping. This is an intelligent girl who is a straight-A student who is kind-hearted and hardworking, and in a couple of months was severely addicted to nicotine, which is readily available. Part of the problem with this vaping is that these vape things are undetectable. It was happening in my home with doors open. You can't smell it. You can't see it. It is very, it's indiscreet. Kids are doing it in the bathrooms at schools. They can hide it in their sleeves and do it in classrooms. It is so easy to hide because you can't smell it and you don't know they're doing it. And the nicotine in those devices is so powerful, and those kids get hooked very, very quickly. And they can't stop. It is very difficult for them to stop. And I know there are lots of issues out there to address, and I know you can't solve it all in one bill, but these companies specifically market to young children to get another generation addicted to nicotine. There's no other way to look at it. And it is hurting our kids, and it is leading most people who vape are four times more likely to smoke cigarettes. And if somebody tells you that vaping is not a stepping stone to other drugs, they're ignorant. Does anyone have any specific questions that I could answer?
Are there questions from the committee? Senator Elvie Gray Jackson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for your testimony. How's your daughter doing now?
You know, she is okay. She is off of nicotine. She's not around marijuana. Unfortunately, the result of this, and to Grace's credit, they have high standards. They both broke the rules, and my son has been expelled. He, by the grace of the principal who fought really hard for him, he has the opportunity to reapply next year. My daughter, since she's only a couple of months away from graduation, she's going to be allowed to attend school online, but she will not be able to attend graduation ceremonies. My daughter has been in counseling since September. We are doubling down with another counselor to help, address her concerns. We're going to put Ryan into counseling to make sure, that was part of the deal with being able to apply again, is make sure they have counseling. But the reality is, while my kids may have some struggles, they're an incredibly supportive environment. And the truth is, in their opinion, half of that high school has a problem with these substances. 70% of the juniors and seniors have a problem with these substances. This is not a little thing. And I guarantee you, if it's that big a deal at Grace, it's an even bigger deal in other schools in the city. I guarantee you. And I've heard it from every parent that has kids at schools. It is a big problem, and you don't even know it. Even when you have kids, you don't know how prevalent this is.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Michelle, I want to offer my gratitude for you sharing your personal story with the committee. Oftentimes, it's your kind of testimony that propels legislators to really look closely at issues to try to solve problems that we have. My question for you has to do with your comment about it's right there in your home and you don't see it in the classrooms. Can you describe to the committee why it is that it's not detectable in terms specifically of the way the devices are packaged, that they look like items that you would have that you would use in a classroom at school, for example?
If you look at it, I saw the Puff Bar Plus. I wouldn't have known what it was. I actually have five of them here in my hand because I wanted to give it to the school so that they were able to show teachers what they're looking at. The Puff Bar Plus, the regular Puff Bars look like a USB pen. They look innocuous. You wouldn't think twice about them. The Pluses are cylindrical and fatter, but they don't, I don't honestly know what they look like, but they're brightly colored, and they have, you know, flavors on the side like guava ice and tangerine ice and, you know, what are these other colors? You know, Coca-Cola, you know, aloe flavors. They have all of these friendly flavors, watermelon, kiwi fruit ice. If you don't know what it is, you honestly, and all it says on there is Puff Plus, you actually wouldn't know what it is. You know, when kids used to smoke cigarettes before, there was literally smoke, okay? It smelled. Your skin smelled. The room smelled. Everything smelled. These things have a fruity flavor, and there's just a vape that comes out that goes away and doesn't linger and doesn't leave any telltale sign. You have no idea. So they can literally stuff it in their shirt, take a vape. Nobody knows. You can be so discreet with this. And it's appealing because of all these fruity flavors. And, you know, some of the stuff is so small. I mean, they can slip it in their sleeves. It's easy for them to vape without anybody knowing that they're vaping. I know my son said, he said, it's awful. He said, it tastes bad. You know, if you swallow it, then you get sick to your stomach. So, you know, the nicotine itself is really awful, but they make it easier by it's easy to use it undetected. Plus, there are fruity flavors in there that make the awful taste better. I didn't know these things existed. All I'd heard about is Juuls. I didn't know about Puff Bars. I didn't know about Puff Bar Plus. What really is frustrating to me is that federal law was trying to deal with this. They went after Juul in particular, who was making the most popular vaping device at the time, but the legislation did not address these disposable things. These are disposable. Once they're done, they've run out of battery or they've run out of the nicotine salt, they're trash, and they're very inexpensive. Juuls are more expensive, but you can keep, you know, refilling the cartridges and keep using them. But somehow there was a loophole in legislation that did not address these disposable one-time use devices. And I realize you can't legislate everything, and manufacturers are going to find ways around everything all the time. I would encourage you to learn as much as you can from other states who have potentially put some time and effort into really putting through some legislation that deals with the marketing and advertising of these. There's a group called truthinitiative.org. that their whole job is to work on educating people about, you know, nicotine addiction, tobacco use, and trying to make a difference. I know it can't be done in one bill, but I think it's worth the effort to do some research to find out what can make an impact. My daughter's impression was that it didn't matter what the law was in terms of the age. She said people will sell it to you even and not check ID. It's the availability of these things. It can be purchased online. It is so easy for these kids to get it. And kids make a business of buying and selling this. It is readily available, and kids can get it in 30 minutes if they want to.
Thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate your testimony. And if there are any other questions, actually, it looks like Senator Stevens has a question for you.
Well, thank you. I just want to get your comment on the taxing issue. Do you believe, Michelle, raising the price will have an impact on fewer kids buying the product?
Honestly, no. And I asked my daughter that. I said, do you think it would matter if they are more expensive? And she said, no. She never bought a single one of these, but she got addicted to it. You know, if you made it, you know, 20 times the price, yeah, that would probably stop it. But if you doubled the price, it's not going to stop it. It is an easy thing for these kids to get addicted to it. If you felt the need to tax, which I honestly don't think is the right approach, I think the right answer would be if you felt like you needed to do taxation to in some way limit it, which I don't think it will do much, I would use that money to enforce existing laws, whether it's checking up on these companies and these shops that are selling to underage kids. And more importantly, get programs out there within the schools to help these kids find a way to break this addiction in a way that doesn't get them expelled from school, that doesn't, you know, shun them and kick them to the curb, but really gives them a path away from this addiction. This addiction happens fast, and they don't know how to get off.
Senator Stevens?
So this does concern me. I hear what you're saying about price. We can change the price. We can raise the price by taxes, but you're saying that doesn't help.
No, I don't believe it does.
But also, you know, if we raise the age to 21, is that going to help? Because kids, as you say, your kids got it from somebody else. They didn't buy it themselves anyway.
Right. Does it help? Does it cure it? No. I think the age thing is a better option than the taxing because you have to do something. I think that's the most effective of the two. But really, you've got to get at the manufacturers. You've got to get to the people that are supplying it. And it's the same with drugs. I mean, if you can't stop illegal drugs into this country, you know, what you do here doesn't make a lot of difference. You've got to stop the supply of it in any way you can. And I'm, you know what, I realize that I'm more of a libertarian than I thought I was when I was trying to think about this bill. And I know you can't legislate morality. I know you know, less overhead isn't necessarily a better thing. But as a parent, watching a child laying on the ground, convulsing and hallucinating and wondering how we got here, it happened via vaping. It really did. And people think it's innocuous. I think the tobacco companies think, well, hey, you know, we're helping these people get off of cigarettes. Yeah, but you're addicting way more children than you ever thought about with regular cigarettes. It's a big deal. I don't know what the right answers are. But I know there's people out there working on it. I know the truthinitiative.org is working really hard. I'm all about people having businesses and making a living, but we have to protect our children. If adults choose to do this, adults choose to do this, but our kids don't have the brains to be able to be making these life-altering decisions, and I want to protect as many as I can.
Thank you very much, Michelle. Again, I really appreciate you calling in and providing your testimony to the committee.
Sure. I'm happy to. And I want to thank every one of you there sitting there in service to our community. I know you make sacrifices for doing what you do, and it's not easy to make big decisions and put in place the right things because you don't necessarily know what the right thing is. But I do believe this bill needs more that addresses the marketing and advertising of these. I knew nothing about these kids, but my kids get advertising from this all the time. When I started researching vaping and nicotine, all of a sudden, even on my husband's computer, which I was not on, he was getting ads for vaping. The internet, as you know, Google, they're out there to, you know, they pay attention to what you're looking for, and then they'll start throwing advertising in your face. That advertising is out there, and it's getting to the kids, and you keep putting these things in front of the kids, and some it's going to be, you know, they're going to be desensitized to it, and it's going to be in their mind that it's okay to try.
Thank you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. Next, I'd like to go into the public testimony portion of Senate Bill 45. I'll go ahead and open public testimony. The first person is Kathy Stewart from Anchorage. Kathy, if you could introduce yourself and provide testimony to the committee, please.
Okay. Hi, my name is Kathy Stewart, and good afternoon, Senator Costello and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. I live in Anchorage. I am a nurse, and this is a very concerning situation to me. I'm a mother, a grandmother, a former smoker. I had family members die of lung cancer. So I know what nicotine can do to a person, to their health. E-cigarettes are tobacco products. They're not regulated like tobacco. They are tobacco products. And in addition to just tobacco, they have other chemicals like propylene glycol, formaldehyde, all these things that can give you increased risk of permanent damage. Lung disease or lung damage. The FDA hasn't found that there's any, that it can be used, an e-cigarette can be used safely to get off of cigarettes. And e-cigarettes are just that. They are cigarettes, but electronic cigarettes. They have all the bad things that that cigarettes have, plus some. So I'm really concerned about how this is affecting the youth in our community and in our country, actually. And I know a lot of these things would have to come from the federal level, but that doesn't mean that we don't do something about it at the local level or at state level if we can. Excuse me, my voice is not good. And I appreciate Michelle talking about the problems with just taxation. I agree that enforcement of current laws, raising the age, and education programs would be helpful, but we showed by raising cigarette taxes that it helped to cut cigarette use, and while it's not the end all, I do believe that it would help. So just like we passed laws to protect our youth from tobacco-related health hazards like COPD and cancer, we need to pass legislation to protect them from other unregulated tobacco products like e-cigarettes. So thank you for all you do, and please vote yes to protect the health of our youth.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Next, Alex McDonald calling in from Fairbanks. Alex?
Yeah, hello, members of the committee. I want to say thank you for your time. I'm phoning from Fairbanks. I was a former smoker for 19 years and been smoke-free since 2013. I'm calling today to oppose SB 45. There's portions of the bill that are already outdated. As far as the shipping, in the last budget in December, Congress expanded the PACT Act, which was passed to cut down on online cigarette sales and included vaping products. So as of today, FedEx will no longer ship vapor products, either business to business or business to customer. UPS and DHL already said no shipping. USPS is in their comment period, and from our understanding, they will be shipping business to business, but nothing's been finalized, so I don't even know if vape shops will be able to get product in. As far as the puff bars go, they ceased distribution in the U.S., I believe, last fall, so those will be coming to an end. But a lot of the sources that the youth will have traditionally gotten products via online or whatever from their friends, that's going to be more regulated. It'll be like shipping firearms, license to license, business to business. So that will greatly clamp down on access to the products, especially in our bush communities. The products themselves, contrary to some of the testimony, Public Health England says they're 95% safer than smoking cigarettes at a conservative estimate. Even the FDA has recognized them as a modified risk product, meaning less harmful than cigarettes. And Dr. Gottlieb, in his continuum of risk, he was the former head of the FDA, put cigarettes at the top as the riskiest products and vapor products down low, along with other nicotine replacement therapies. And as far as cessation, I'm proof. I've been smoke-free for 8 years now. I lost my grandma to lung cancer, and I don't want to see anyone else do that. My whole family quit smoking. It's amazing. But getting back to the cessation, I submitted an article from the New England Journal of Medicine showing that vapor products are 2 to 3 times more effective in cessation than traditional nicotine therapy. And just last week, Public Health England released a report stating that vaping was the most commonly used method for smokers to quit smoking and had the highest success rates. So just because the FDA doesn't recognize it as a cessation product doesn't mean that people aren't using it as one. I did. I know it works. There's all kinds of information out there. And taxes are just going to push people back to smoking. Raising the age will just make young adults criminals for no reasons. None of the testimony we heard today said that they bought their products at a vape shop or retail location. They got them from social sources or staff.
Alex, if you could wrap up your testimony, please. We have a couple other folks in line, but thank you.
Yep. Thank you for your time. This bill would do more harm than good.
Thank you. So next online, we have Alyssa Keel from Fairbanks. Alyssa, please provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Keel. I am from Fairbanks, and I am testifying on behalf of myself in favor of SB 45. I am a part-time swim coach, so I have the opportunity to be a trusted adult to around 80 young people almost every day. The swimmers that I directly coach are in the middle school age range. When I ask my swimmers about vaping and whether they know kids who vape in their schools, their answers always echo their uncertainty about vaping and why they shouldn't try it, and the resounding yes to knowing students who vape or have tried vaping. The confusion seems to stem from the misleading message that vaping is safer than smoking, when really, honestly, safer doesn't always mean safe. Our lungs were made for fresh, clean air, and nicotine addiction is still nicotine addiction regardless of the vehicle. So as a swim coach, I very much want my swimmers to understand those two points. The devices that are most common for my swimmers to know about are the smaller ones, the ones with a lot of flavor varieties, and often are disposable. I am interested in this piece of legislation as I think it shows that we understand that these are nicotine products and that they will be treated the same across the board. Nicotine is a very addictive drug, and anything that deters young people from using these products is a good thing in my book. Raising Alaska's purchase age to 21 and taxing e-cigarettes at the same level as other tobacco products are a step in the right direction. This concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alyssa. Appreciate you calling in, and I hope your swimmers have a great season. Next, we have Sarah Eaton from Wasilla. Sarah, could you please introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony?
Hello, my name is Sarah Eaton, and I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I am a breast cancer survivor and smoked for the majority of my young life. I started smoking when I was 15 years old, and back then it was regular combustible cigarettes. And I purchased them from the corner store or got them wherever I could get an adult to buy them for me. That hasn't changed from 40 years ago to today. Kids are smart. They know how to get these products, and it doesn't matter if there's an age or a tax barrier. They're going to find a way to get these products. I will tell you that I started vaping 9 years ago now, and it saved my life. I had emphysema and COPD, and it really scared me because I have two young children, and I wanted to be there for them. Vaping saved my life, and the reason I say it saved my life is because today, when I have a chest x-ray done, the doctors no longer can see COPD or emphysema on my lungs. They are healed from what combustible cigarettes did to me. I'm calling in today to oppose not all of SB 45, but the tax portion of SB 45. Where I live in Wasilla, Alaska, there is a 55% SX wholesale tax on my products that I purchased already. If the state approves this, they'll add the 75% onto my products, then I'll have to pay 130% tax on my vaping products that are saving my life. I went from a 12-milligram cigarette all the way down to a 1-milligram cigarette. So I smoke or vape 1 milligram in my juice. That's all I have. I've cut myself down off of the nicotine, and my doctors all are very impressed with my lung function and the way that it looks, especially after having radiation treatment to my chest cavity from the breast cancer that I had. I'm definitely afraid that if you put the 75% tax onto my already 55% tax, I'm not going to be able to afford my product. But I do understand as a mother getting these products away from children, that it needs to fall on us parents to educate our children that they don't need to put anything into their lungs except for air, in which I have educated my children, and neither one of them smoke. Neither one of them vape. They are both in very good, healthy condition. I'm nervous today, so apologize.
Are you there?
Yes, that's fine, Sarah. I understand it's a little bit unnerving to testify in a committee. If you could wrap up your testimony, that would be great. And
I just want to say that I really do oppose this and that I want you guys to do a little more research into what our federal government already has been doing for the regulation in the vaping community. They have the PMTAs, which regulates the e-liquid side of it. So now I feel safer going into a vape store and buying these liquids because it's regulated by the FDA. They are not allowing products on the counters that haven't been tested, and to make sure that there is no formaldehyde and antifreeze and other things that in the beginning of vaping they did find in the vaping products. The federal government also just enacted the PACT Act. So I'm very grateful to see that the online sales are going to go away because they can't ship them to anybody. As a consumer, you can't go online and buy these products anymore because none of the shipping places will send you the stuff. It's illegal to do. So I wanted to thank you very much for taking your time to listen to me. If you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer any.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I don't see any questions from committee members. Next, Sean De Silva from Anchorage, if you could provide your testimony to the committee.
Yes. Hi there. My name is Chairwoman Costello and Vice Chair Holland and members of the committee. My name is Sean De Silva. I'm actually the co-owner of three vapor stores in Alaska. I'm a co-founder of a group called Clear the Air Alaska. My goal is to eliminate combustible cigarette smoking in everywhere that I'm located. So I happen to have stores in three different states. I've been in this business for about 8 years, and over that time, I've helped almost 80,000 adults stop smoking. This 75% tax, wholesale tax, will, in the case of Anchorage and Wasilla, will actually equate to 130% wholesale tax. Now, we heard earlier some testimony regarding, you know, vaping and where kids are getting it. They're buying these things on Snapchat. They're not buying these from legitimate stores that are in Alaska. And it's unfortunate that we can't spend the time and to go after those, you know, illicit operators. Additionally, e-liquid, which is the primary component, is actually only made up of four ingredients: propylene glycol, which is actually used in almost all frozen foods these days, vegetable glycerin, which is a food-grade product. There may be nicotine. We actually sell vaping e-liquid that has no nicotine, and flavoring. So, yes, adults do like flavors. For anyone who's unfortunately has smoked, they understand that, you know, tobacco is an awful-tasting product. I don't know anybody who enjoys it, but they would prefer to stop. And one of the ways we've been able, that has happened, is adults are looking at that and wanting to utilize that. You know, again, one thing that was referenced was UK public health. For those that aren't familiar, UK public health is responsible for the health care and well-being of every citizen of the United Kingdom. They have been running a study literally every year and updating it with information about vaping and how it can help people stop smoking. And again, they just actually published last week that vaping is literally twice as effective as any other cessation method that they have utilized. And they want to eliminate combustible cigarettes by the year 2030. So the dialogue around, we want to help adult smokers stop smoking. We don't want to penalize them from taking a safer alternative. You're correct. It is not perfectly safe, but it's safer. It's considered 95% safer. It's kind of like we drive a car, we wear a seatbelt to protect ourselves. So if we have adults that smoke cigarettes and we can switch them to something that will save money, save lives, we kill 480,000 people a year by supporting and selling cigarettes, we should be looking at doing something about that. Now, the idea that kids are getting it is unfortunate. I have two daughters. I have told them I would absolutely, they'll never vape. They don't need to. And as a parent, we all have the responsibility to ensure that our kids aren't doing these things. Now, unfortunately, kids drink, they smoke marijuana or smoke illegal synthetic marijuana, and they are drinking, unfortunately, or smoking, and we don't want them to do that. But the idea that vaping has led to smoking, why is it that the actual combustible cigarette usage levels in the U.S. are the lowest they've ever been? So the idea that it's a gateway based on the last 8 to 10 years is not founded in facts. And we have some other folks that are going to provide testimony and provided data around that.
Sean, if you could please wrap up your comments.
What's that?
Oh, if you could please wrap up your comments, that would be great. Public testimony is around 2 minutes, and we're heading into four.
I am absolutely opposed to the taxation side of this. I think there's a dialogue to be had. We should ensure that kids aren't getting access to this, but it is not coming from the adult-only vapor stores that we have. And I urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Next, we have Charles Edge from Fairbanks. Charles, if you could provide your testimony, please, and keep it to 2 minutes, possible.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Charles Edge. I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. And I'm going to apologize. I'm nervous. I've never done this before, so please bear with me. I'm calling to oppose portions of SB 45. This is nerve-wracking. the age upping for me personally is very disturbing. I was a 6-year member of the United States Army. I was stationed up here at Wainwright, and when I got out, I came back because I loved it so much. And I was coming back from came back here from Virginia, and it was really, really, it's one of those things that I came back up here from Virginia because one, it was Alaska, and two, because some of the laws that were being passed by the Virginia State Legislature were just very, very draconian, and to see something like that in Alaska, it kind of broke my heart. Now, I smoked for 4 or 5 years, and I understand why you'd want to raise the age. I do, but my consternation with this is that it is taking the ability of otherwise legal adults who go through stuff, who have anxiety, and you know, like myself at the moment, who have anxiety, and it's removing that as a coping mechanism for them. My comrades in arms up here, almost everybody either dips or smokes, and now there's a lot of them that are vaping, and I can attest from personal experience that the vaping is a lot better than smoking and dipping, and I can't fathom the. I'm sure I phrase this. I can't fathom the mindset that would allow people to be tried as an adult, that would allow people to sign up to serve the country, to go overseas, and you know, unfortunately do what it is they have to do if they're called to do so, and then not allow them to take advantage of, you know, being an actual adult. I can't see that. That's barking up the wrong tree. Now, having said that, I understand that the crux of this is to keep these products out of the hands of minors. I seem to recall SB 15 allowed parents to purchase these devices for their underage children. It seems very hypocritical, I guess, of the legislature to on one hand say we're going to allow parents to do what it is they're going to do with their kids, but then also how are kids getting these devices? It just doesn't work. I'm going to wrap this up because I'm nervous. I'm tripping over my words. But if there are any questions for me, I'll be more than happy to entertain those.
Thank you very much, Charles. You did a fine job testifying. Are there any questions? Nope, I don't see any. Thank you very much. Appreciate you calling in. Next, Jamie Morgan with the American Heart Association. And if I could ask those folks who are testifying to keep your remarks succinct, please. Thank you.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jamie Morgan, and I'm calling on behalf of the American Heart Association, and I appreciate you giving me the time to speak today on such an important policy. You've heard the statistics that Alaska has made great progress in reducing cigarette smoking prevalence, especially among youth. However, with the increased use of e-cigarettes, especially among youth, tobacco use is on the rise and reversing that progress. The tobacco industry has long targeted Alaskan youth, hoping to replace the current smokers who are dying from their products, and use of e-cigarettes are becoming an increasing crisis among teens. Furthermore, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine concluded there is substantial evidence that if a youth or young adult uses an e-cigarette, they are at increased risk for using traditional cigarettes. E-cigarettes have been falsely marketed as a safe alternative to traditional cigarettes and as a tool to help adult smokers quit. Tobacco companies are targeting youth and addicting a new generation to tobacco and nicotine. In order to address this epidemic, the AHA supports public policies like those in SB 45 that regulate and tax e-cigarettes in the same way as all other tobacco products and raising the legal sales age for tobacco products to 21. We believe the enforcement of these laws should include holding those who sell tobacco to minors or the industry that aggressively markets to young people and then profit from their addiction should be held accountable, not penalizing youth for having the product. We know that increasing taxes on cigarettes and other tobacco products and e-cigarettes have been proven to be a win-win. Significantly increasing the tax results in fewer kids starting to smoke as they are price sensitive and in more adults quitting. I appreciate your time today, and I can provide some information on the British study if you'd like.
Thank you very much, Jamie. That would be wonderful if you provided that testimony in writing to my office. Next, I'd like to invite Ryan Toomseth from Kenai to testify, and if you could keep your remarks succinct for the committee, that would be appreciated. Ryan?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the committee for allowing me to testify. I'll be quick. I just want to say that I'm against this. I have kids myself. I talk to my kids about vaping and the risks associated. And there's all sorts of products out there. There's pouches that they could take that's similar to chewing. This just happens to be popular, and so it becomes something that's targeted. But High Times Magazine came out with a vaporizer device 20 years ago. So if you're going to make an attempt to try to tax electronic vaping products, you really have to look at very common things you could buy at Home Depot. It's really way more complicated than, you know, just simply saying an electronic smoking device. I really think that I tend to agree with some of Mr. McDonald's comments more than I do the Heart Association's comments, and, you know, would ask that he allow to be send those to your office as well, because you know, a lot of the federal online sales things have already been addressed, and you're really just going to implement something that's going to create criminals out of people who are potentially addicted to something. I just think that this is something with all the else that's going on in this state. I think you know, and I know, and we all know, this really has no chance. But I'd rather see you guys working on more important things than this, and I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ryan. I appreciate your testimony and that you kept it succinct for us. Next, John Barrier, who's the senior director of Juul Labs, calling from Sacramento. Mr. Barrier?
Appreciate the opportunity. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Sorry. Again, I'd started in, but I'll try to keep it succinct. Thanks for the opportunity to submit testimony on SB 45. At Juul Labs, we're focused on resetting our company in the vapor category in the U.S. and building constructive relationships with regulators, policymakers, and other stakeholders to earn trust and advance the harm reduction potential for adult smokers. We remain committed to combating underage use of vapor products by working with states toward full implementation and enforcement of Tobacco 21. We're pleased to see this section included in SB 45 and are committed to working with stakeholders in the state to achieve full implementation. Recent data suggests that although significant work remains, meaningful progress is being made to combat underage use of vapor products through evidence-based interventions such as T21. And while underage vaping rates remain unacceptably high in the U.S., the numbers are trending down. The 2020 National Youth Tobacco Survey found past 30-day e-cigarette use among high school students decreased almost 30%. And in 2019, and the 2020 Monitoring the Future survey found that the previous rise in e-cigarette use among those underage either slowed or reversed. And even with T21 legislation in effect, it's critical that states align their minimum age purchase laws to facilitate full implementation and enforcement of T21. And so we fully support this aspect of T21 in the bill. In addition to the company's commitment to combating underage use through evidence-based interventions like T21, we also support regulation that protects and advances potential harm reduction opportunities for adult smokers to help them transition away from combustible cigarettes. And to do so, we think risk proportionate regulation for vapor and other reduced risk non-combustible products is critical. And that such a policy framework at its core applies the most stringent regulations to the riskiest products, such as cigarettes, and encourages adult users to migrate to potentially less harmful alternatives like vapor products. And to be clear, risk proportionate regulation does not mean a leaning approach to non-combustible alternatives. It certainly does not mean an unregulated marketplace, but rather robust, informed regulation of tobacco and nicotine products in the category will always be appropriate. But the regulatory balance should be weighted in favor of harm reduction. And so we're concerned that the provision of SB 45 imposing a 75% wholesale tax on these products risks hindering the harm reduction potential for adult smokers who may continue smoking or former smokers who may return to combustible cigarettes. One study I'd want to highlight recently in the Journal of Risk and Uncertainty estimated that the 95% wholesale tax on vape products that was implemented in Minnesota increased adult smoking, deterring more than 32,000 adult smokers in the state from transitioning away from cigarettes. And the excise tax proposed in SB 45 comes at a time when long-term declines in combustible cigarette sales have stalled, and after falling for years and declining 5.5% in 2019, cigarette sales in the U.S. were flat in 2020. In response to the excessive tax rate in SB 45, which, as some folks have pointed out, made it even more exorbitant when combined with local taxes on vapor products at 55%, such as those opposed in Wasilla and I think going into effect today in Anchorage, some adult consumers are also going to seek out cheaper products that can be purchased through illicit markets, which predominantly occur outside of tax regulation. And that more prominent illicit market can potentially present additional health and safety risks for adult consumers and undermine underage prevention measures. So that increase in the scope of the illicit market could also cause responsible retailers in Alaska to lose business and reduce expected revenue for the state. So in conclusion, T21 laws have been proven to be effective evidence-based policy to combat underage use of tobacco and vapor products, and we strongly support that. However, we're concerned that the provision of SB 45 with the excessive tax rate on vapor would lead to adverse consequences in the state while being an ineffective measure to attempt to address underage use. So we respectfully request that the excise tax provision be removed from SB 45 and the amended Tobacco 21 legislation be subsequently passed, but we'd love to engage along with other stakeholders with the committee to develop a thoughtful risk-proportionate tax framework for all tobacco and nicotine products. Thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Barrier, if you could put your name and your title on the record, that was something that we ask callers to do. So if you could just mention your name and your title and company.
Sure, absolutely. I think I was muted by the system. But John Barrier, I'm Senior Director of State Government Affairs for Juul Labs.
And I just have two questions for you. I was curious, what is the national marketing budget for Juul? And then my second question is, why are the products marketed so that they're small, so that children or students can put them in backpacks, and they look like items that you would have for use in a classroom? Could you enlighten me why the company chooses to create the products in such a manner that children will actually want to own them?
So to answer your first question, as of fall of 2019, the company stopped all marketing and advertising. So we've spent $0 since late 2019 on any marketing and advertising. And as part of our PMTA submission, which was referenced earlier, which is required of the FDA of all companies who make these products, we're submitting a marketing plan which is specifically targeted at adult consumers of cigarettes. And I could get more detail of that. But to answer your second question, these products were designed to be most effective for adult smokers to transition off of these products. So the actual physical nature of the design, there's various designs of vapor products in the categories, open system, closed systems. We're a closed system product that is tamper resistant and designed to deliver competitive nicotine experience for adult smokers who are looking to transition off of combustible cigarettes. And that's probably the shortest and best way I could answer the question about the actual design of the product.
And Mr. Barrier, could you let us know what PMTA stands for, the acronym PMTA?
Yes, it's the pre-market tobacco application, which the FDA has required of all companies that make vapor products and other nicotine products, including pouches, et cetera, to submit a rather robust application for review by the agency, and that all those applications had to be submitted by September of last year, and they're undergoing review as we speak, and the FDA has planned to, under court order, deliver their verdict, essentially, to say that these products are allowed to remain on the market because the standard of they are appropriate for the protection of public health. So that is how they are able to stay on the market, and they're supposed to deliver those results by September of this year. And all other products that have not submitted an application or that fail to be approved by the FDA are not allowed to be on the market.
Thank you very much. Next.
Like Puff Bar that produce illicit products that were referenced earlier.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Carrie Nyson with the American Lung Association calling from Vancouver. Carrie, if you could state your name and title and affiliation for the record and then provide your testimony.
You bet. Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Carrie Nyson, and I'm the Senior Director of Advocacy for the American Lung Association. The Lung Association strongly supports taxing electronic cigarettes as we do other tobacco products. Increasing prices is one of the best ways to decrease consumption, encourage users to quit, and delay youth from using these harmful products. This is one tool that we have in our toolbox that is evidence-based and that we know works. Let's not be fooled. Electronic cigarettes are not safe. Heating up toxic chemicals and inhaling these chemicals into our lungs is not healthy. Inhalation of these chemicals can cause irreversible lung damage and disease. The flavorings added to entice use and to make the taste more palatable can cause inflammation in the lungs. Some of these flavorings are approved as food additives. They're designed and approved to be ingested, not inhaled into our lungs. We've heard an opponent talk about the study from England that allegedly shows that these products are much safer than cigarettes. The Lancet, a weekly peer-reviewed medical journal, did an editorial rebutting this claim, acknowledging the study provided the basis for the figure that was based on views from a panel of experts, some of whom appeared to have ties with the e-cigarette industry. The European Respiratory Society offers an alternative to the England study and has pushed back against the claim of a 95% less harmful claim. E-cigarette use sustains the addiction to nicotine. These products are not approved as cessation devices. Manufacturers have taken no steps to have them researched and tested to be approved as cessation devices. And switching to electronic cigarettes is not leaving the nicotine addiction behind. It's maintaining and sustaining the addiction to nicotine. This is a good bill, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carrie. And if you could provide the committee any of the medical journal, the peer-reviewed medical journal article that you referenced, that would be great, and we can distribute that along with the other studies that have been mentioned today during the hearing. Next, I'd like to invite Gregory Conley with the American Vaping Association, calling from Medford, New Jersey. Gregory, if you could provide your name and title and association and then your public testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Costello and members of the committee. My name is Gregory Conley. I currently serve as the president of a nonprofit called the American Vaping Association. I'm also a lawyer with a great deal of knowledge about the FDA regulatory process, so I'm glad to answer any questions on that front. And with Alaska still having nearly 100,000 adult smokers, we're here today to strongly urge opposition to the tax portion of Senate Bill 45. And we're not here today to defend the Snapchat drug dealers selling to youth, nor are we here today to defend the Snapchat vape sellers who are selling unauthorized products to youth. None of these people will respond to a tax bill. They will simply continue to act in the illicit market as they are today. I just want to also point out the prior speaker talked about irreversible lung damage from vaping. Let's be clear. The only documented irreversible lung damage and or death from vaping came in 2019 when drug dealers, principally in states without legal recreational markets, started to sell contaminated illicit THC cartridges. Those are products of the illicit market. Again, no tax is going to stop the illicit market. You need actual enforcement to do that. So taxing vaping products, you're not going to stop the Snapchat sellers. You're not going to stop the companies like Puff Bar that are currently in violation of federal law and subject to FDA enforcement if any store in Alaska is selling them today. And you've also heard testimony about the anxiety, the depression that often precedes youth turning to nicotine products despite being underage. You're not going to stop that by including a tax. All you're going to do, as the research cited in our written testimony, you're just going to discourage adult smokers from quitting. And lastly, I'll note that prior to some earlier testimony, legal and regulated, very strictly regulated online sales to adults, it's not going away. And in fact, Alaska has a special protection for intrastate shipping. So Alaska retailers shipping to Alaska consumers with ID at delivery through even the USPS that will be continued to be permitted. So I'm glad to address that, but I'm over my time. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Gregory. Are there any questions from the committee members? No, seeing none, thank you. Next, Jay Oku, calling from Orange County. Jay, if you could provide your name, and if it looks like you're calling in as an individual, and then provide your testimony to the committee. Jay, we're unable to hear you, so I'm going to go to the next individual and then come back to you.
No, I'm here.
Oh, all right. If we can hear you, if you can state your name for the record and provide your testimony, please.
Sure. Members of the committee, thank you for your time. Just calling to strongly oppose SB 45. My name is Jay Oku, Government Relations Director here at Five Ponds. We started this in 2012 to help adults transition from smoking with maturely branded, meticulously manufactured harm reduction products. We support D21, as previous callers have mentioned as well, and we're passionate advocates for tobacco harm reduction technology. These are not like a wheatgrass shot. We prefer that no one smokes or vapes, yet we know with the peer-reviewed science that illustrates that e-cigarettes are a magnitude of order less harmful than smoking. So it's our goal to help offset the leading cause of preventable death with this technology. I'd like to just address a couple of the previous proponents mentioning that FDA has not said anything about safely utilizing vaping as a tool. Dr. Scott Lieb, former director, said if you could take every adult smoker and fully switch them to e-cigarettes, that would have a substantial public health impact. And former Commissioner Mitch Zeller, if we can get all of those people to completely switch all of their cigarettes for one of these non-combustible products like e-cigarettes, that would be good for public health. A lot of the same rhetoric from the proponents of this bill are echoed through lobbyists throughout the country. The fact is 480,000 people die per year from smoking-related disease. I'm very sorry to hear about the mom who had a daughter who was hospitalized for smoking illegal black market THC, but I'd like to address the emotional topic of children vaping. We've screened the international academic literature for studies published between 2018 and 2020. Currently, vaping is mainly concentrated in young people who have experience of smoking. Less than 1% of those young people who have never smoked are current vapers. 10 years after e-cigarettes market's emergence, smoking rates among 18 to 24-year-olds declined 47%. So increasingly incorrect perceptions among public about harms of vaping could prevent some smokers, adult smokers, from using vaping products to quit smoking. Adult specialty vape shops are not the culprit. From January 2018 to September 2019, the FDA administered 464 tobacco age compliance inspections in Alaska, in which the agency used a minor to attempt to purchase tobacco products. Of those, 1% of all compliance checks involved the sale of e-cigarettes or vaping devices. I'd like to propose a solution. The federal age to vape is 21 years old. It's not these specialty stores that are doing this. It's the black market, as previous callers have said. And we need to educate youth and parents. In 2019, Alaska received $83.2 million in tobacco taxes and tobacco settlement payments. In the same year, the state only spent $9.1 million, or 10% of that, on funding tobacco control programs, including education and prevention. This is economic activity of $40 million in Alaska in 2018. So we respectfully request that you remove the excessive taxation portion of this bill, because we've seen in states like Pennsylvania with a 40% tax, New Jersey, this will grow a black market, and it's going to kill Alaskan businesses that aren't part of the problem. It is the black market. So increasing the education is critical. We really appreciate you taking the time to hear the facts and not rush to judgment without the facts, and updating the data, just like the original doctor had mentioned about the efficacy, and Mr. McDonald had mentioned the February 14th article from the New England Journal of Medicine saying it's two times more effective than nicotine replacement therapy. So it's really a matter of staying up to date. This is an ever-evolving subject, and there's a lot of great science. I'll be sure to email you these studies that I've referred to as well.
Thank you very much, Jay. Next, we have Lindsay Stroud calling from Washington, D.C. with the Taxpayers Alliance. Lindsay, if you could provide your testimony, and if you could keep it brief, please. We have some other individuals who've been waiting to testify. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, fantastic. I'm Chairwoman, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Lindsay Stroud. I'm a policy analyst with Taxpayers Protection Alliance, and I will keep this kind of brief. So vapor products are considered tobacco harm reduction tools. They are significantly less harmful, and they have helped millions of American adults quit smoking, and they should not be subject to sin taxes. They first emerged in the United States in 2007, and between 2009 and 2012 is when we really saw the expanded market and this emergence of e-cigarettes. Regarding youth e-cigarette use in Alaska, in 2019, 45.8% of high school students reported ever trying e-cigarettes, 26.1% reported past e-cigarette use in the past 30 days, and 4.5% reported using vapor products daily. It is worthy to note that youth combustible cigarette use is at an all-time low. In 2019, only 27.5% of Alaska high school students reported ever trying cigarettes. This is a 62% decrease from 1995, when 72.1% of high school students had ever tried combustible cigarettes. Further, past use in the 30 days has decreased by 77%, from 36.5% of high school students in 1995 to 8.4% in 2019. I mentioned there was a caller that mentioned that e-cigarettes are mostly used by 18 to 24-year-olds, and there is some valid in there, but also that it does correlate with a very low decrease, or a very major decrease in youth, or 18 to 24-year-old smoking. Between 1998, the percentage of current smokers aged 18 to 24 years old decreased on an average 1.7% each year, and between 2009 and 2019, annual percentage declines average at 4.5%. I did have a written testimony that was submitted. Vapor taxes have not really deterred the use of e-cigarettes, and there's analysis from five different states that was included. And the only state that did see a decline in youth vaping in the recent years has been California, and they've spent $250.4 million on tobacco control programs in 2019 alone. Speaking of tobacco control funding, Alaska is ranked number two in funding tobacco control programs, but it still allocates little in state funding on education and prevention efforts. In 20 years, the state allocated only $143.9 million towards tobacco control programs. And during the same time period, the state received over $1 billion in cigarette taxes and $567.8 million in tobacco tax settlement payments. To put it in further perspective, in 2019, Alaska spent $9.1 million on tobacco control programs. This is about $94 per smoker. And when you figure the amount of youth in the state, it's only $10.56 per resident under 18 years of age. Rather than imposing sin taxes that others also have quit smoking, Alaska should allocate additional existing tobacco money on youth prevention and education programs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you calling in and providing testimony and also the written testimony. Next, Alex Clark, the CEO of the Consumer Advocate for a Smoke-Free Association. Alex, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please.
Sure. Thank you. Just to make sure the mic works.
Yep. We can hear you fine.
Excellent. As you mentioned, my name is Alex Clark. I'm the CEO of the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association. We're a 501c4 nonprofit consumer advocacy organization dedicated to promoting tobacco harm reduction as a necessary strategy to reduce the early death and disease from smoking. Thank you, members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak tonight, today. And I'm here on behalf of our more than 600 members in the state of Alaska who are very concerned about their ability to continue accessing safer nicotine products. We are opposed to both sides of this bill, in fact. I will align ourselves with some of the other comments presented by people opposed to this bill with regard to the tax and take it a step further. We are opposed to raising the age of purchase to 21, particularly in states that criminalize possession and use. And I think if there is one recommendation I'd like to leave you all with here is that I think the legislature's energy would be better spent repealing that provision. There really is no sense in adding insult to injury for young people who get caught using these products, especially not people who are considered adults in just about every other walk of life between the ages of 18 and 21. Another thing I'd really like to point out here very quickly is I think it's necessary to kind of reset the table a little bit on the narrative about the people who make up the industry and its consumers. I am a consumer. I smoked for 21 years. For the better part of that, I was a two-pack-a-day smoker. I didn't actually start having success with quitting smoking until I stopped listening to the advice of public health authorities and started listening to my dad, who had successfully switched from smoking to using nicotine gum. And so for anyone out there who is trying to quit, I think what we have here is a crisis of education. And that goes for parents as well. For anybody who is using nicotine or tobacco products and wants to quit, just know that it's not nearly as hard as the propaganda makes it out to be, and that there are plenty of resources available for people. And it's really a matter of having all of the options on the table so that people will be more likely to completely transition away to a smoke-free product or give up nicotine altogether. With that, I'm sorry, I'm losing my place here, but just to reemphasize, we are opposed to this bill. Taxing these products, treating these products like tobacco products sends the inaccurate message to people that these products carry the same risks. The only people who are going to be affected by this are the folks who are already following the law. And back to the crisis of education here, I shouldn't be shocked, but I am still a bit shocked when I hear parents speak about these products and all they know is one particular brand. The story of this industry, the story of this community, is that these products were made by people who were trying to quit smoking. We, consumers, are the ones who added flavors to these products so that we would be more likely to stick with these products and not go back to smoking. So the narrative has been built up about what people remember from established incumbent tobacco companies misusing their massive economic resources in funding science to persuade or mislead the public into believing things that weren't true. But that is not what we have in the vapor industry here. We have people in among consumers and people who own businesses who have quite literally taken the power back, taken their agency back, and found a different path. Inherent in this, of course, is the biggest challenge of all, which is that these products have democratized nicotine. We're no longer dependent on incumbent cigarette companies or pharmaceutical companies to access a safer form of nicotine. And there are obviously challenges that come with that, but just say no isn't going to solve this problem. And I think that if there was another area of focus for any legislature, it would be in beefing up education programs and making sure that those education programs are presenting facts and not propaganda. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Alex. And could you mention which community you are calling from? I think we missed that at the beginning.
Oh, hi. Yes, I am very much out of state. I'm calling from sunny Plattsburgh, New York.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 45? Is there anybody in the room that wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, public testimony on Senate Bill 45 is now closed. Are there any comments from committee members? The intention is to hold this bill and consider the testimony we heard today. Any comments from the bill sponsor? Senator Stevens.
Well, I think one thing that came clear to me is that we get a lot of money from tobacco cessation, and we should be spending more money on education.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. We do have Katie Steffens online with the State of Alaska Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Katie, would you be interested in responding to a couple testifiers who said that the amount of money that we collect versus what we spend on cessation programs is somewhat unbalanced. Could you comment on that, please?
Hi, this is Katie Steffens. Through the chair, could you repeat that question? It was broken up a bit.
Yes. So several individuals who testified mentioned the amount of money that the state brings in through the tobacco tax, and yet they then turned around and mentioned what we actually spend on cessation and education programs, and that figure was much less than what we bring in. And I was wondering if you could either correct that or comment on those folks who testified making that point.
Sure. So for state funds, we spend $550,000 on our Alaska Tobacco Quitline. And with that money, we ensure that we provide free counseling and nicotine replacement therapy. And what that nicotine replacement therapy provides is gum, lozenges, that can be sent to people who register for those services.
And Katie, do you know what the state receives in tobacco tax?
Sure. And the state receives in total is $8 million from this previous year, fiscal year.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Katie. And it does seem to be a little out of whack, and we could be spending more money if it would be of value to help people stop smoking. But can you just explain the nicotine replacement? We keep hearing that vaping is the best way to replace smoking cigarettes, to get off that. Yet there are a lot of ways that you can get off smoking otherwise. Can you sort of explain what is available to people in our state?
Sure. Well, we, of course, we provide the Alaska Tobacco Quitline. And just as a reminder, cessation devices in the United States does not currently include e-cigarettes. And so along with our Alaska Tobacco Quitline, we also fund community grantees to do education throughout Alaska. And we have 23 grant-funded communities where they will talk with schools and other partners in the area to try and get information out about these products and other tobacco products in general.
Thank you.
Katie, is that information about the grant the grants something that we can find online so that the members here who represent Kodiak and Anchorage can see where those funds are going?
Sure. I'm also happy to send our annual fiscal report to you as well, if that would be helpful.
That would be wonderful. And while we're at it, could you mention what the Quitline phone number is?
Sure. It is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. and you will be directed to Alaska Services. Okay.
Thank you very much, Katie. I also want to give Joe Darnell with the Department of Behavioral Health Tobacco Enforcement, who's been online listening and available for questions. Joe, could you also provide a short description of the efforts for tobacco enforcement that you are involved in?
Yes, through the chair. My name is Joe Darnell. I'm with Behavioral Health Tobacco Enforcement. And if I understand your question right, they unmute us and we miss half of what you're saying. But if I understand right, what you're asking is just a brief description on what we do to enforce underage sales of tobacco and vape products.
Yeah, that would be great. And our committee is actually wrapping up in a few minutes here. So if you could just provide a brief explanation to the members, please.
Absolutely. We have student interns that work for us that we check retail shops, vape shops, and normal tobacco retailers to see if they're complying with the underage laws as they sit. We also do premise inspections to see that retailers are following any of the licensing laws that they're supposed to be doing. We offer certification program to the retailers to help them put policies in place to not sell to underage people. What else do we do? There's a couple other smaller programs, but pretty much besides just active enforcement, we're out there trying to educate the retailers on how to not sell to underage people.
Are there any further questions for Joe? Okay, we do have a question for Katie. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Katie, thank you so much for your testimony, but I heard you say that you provide free counseling, so I'm wondering if there is any criteria involved to qualify for free counseling. Thank you.
Through the chair, this is Katie. Yes, there are some limitations. You have to be 18 or older to use our quitline, but we did recently add a service for parents to help you quit champions for youth under the age of 18 called Live Vape Free, just to educate parents on the harmful effects of e-cigarettes and how to help their kids get off the products.
Thank you.
But beyond that, there are no restrictions of accessing the quitline.
Thank you.
So that was Katie Steffens with the Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Katie, is there some statute that is directing that the help can only be to 18 or older individuals, or is that something that can be provided to younger individuals, or is there some legal prohibition about helping a younger person with their addiction?
Through the chair, Alaska is an informed consent state, and so this is why the Alaska Quitline can only support those who are over the age of 18.
And do you know how many parents actually use that service for their children?
We have recently just started this program, and I don't think I have actual usage rates on me at the moment, but that's something I can look up.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Katie. Appreciate your comments. So, you know, going back to what you originally said about we receive $8 million in tobacco cessation from the tobacco companies. We spend $550,000. Is there anything we're missing here? Is there anything we should be doing that we're not doing to help kids who are addicted to nicotine?
Through the chair, to Senator Stevens, yes, I believe that we know that taxing of tobacco products is the single most effective way for youth and young adults to stop using these products or even begin using these products. We also know that price increases significantly help those of lower socioeconomic status to get off these products as well. And of course, raising the age to 21 would put us at federal regulations as well and would help store owners here get some clarity on having that age limit be set to national regulations too.
Katie, do you know the penalty for an individual who is found selling or possessing tobacco if they are underage?
Through the chair, I would like to have that question be answered by Joe Darnell.
Joe, did you hear the question?
Yes, I did. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. If a clerk is found guilty of selling to an underage minor, it's a minimum $300 fine up to $500.
Okay. And what is there a penalty for the underage individual possessing the tobacco product, the e-cigarette product?
Yes, there's under state statutes, the penalty for possession of tobacco is $500.
And do you have statistics on how many youth are found guilty of possessing and paying this $500 fine?
Not right off the top of my head, but I could get it. I could research and get it sent to you.
Great. If you could also include the clerks who are found selling and are paying that fine, and maybe the last fiscal year or whichever year is easiest for you to grab that information, that would be helpful.
Absolutely. I'll get that together and send it to you.
Okay. Well, that concludes today's Senate Labor and Commerce Committee hearing on Wednesday, March 3rd at 1:30. We have our second meeting of the week. We will be reviewing Senator Rivack's Senate Bill 69, exempting renewable energy electric plants, the governor's Senate Bill 54, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Water and Sewer Bonds Bill, also the governor's Senate Bill 55, employer contributions to the public employees retirement system. We will have a second hearing on Senate President Michiki's Senate Bill 9, Alcohol Beverage Control Title IV Rewrite Bill, and then Senator Keel's Senate Joint Resolution 9. He will be introducing that in its first hearing, urging an exemption for cruise ships. So with that, I want to thank the committee members and also Senator Rivack for being online, and we are adjourned.